Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you whisper.
Please welcome to the show this evening, my guest, Mary Marshall.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Many of us wear many different hats. We go about our days doing our regular jobs and then perhaps maybe a hobby or two, but in the evening time or even perhaps during investigative time, some of us dabble in the paranormal. My guest this evening, Mary Marshall, is someone who wears many hats. Mary has helped institute and develop one of the first paranormal studies programs in the country that the sciences, including physics, neuroscience, and cultural anthropology, relate to paranormal phenomenon. It is her goal that sharing knowledge will result in the creation of better investigators and researchers, and in general, broaden people's perspectives and understanding of paranormal activity. Although her primary focus is on ghostly type activity, starting at a very young age, Mary has been drawn to and interested in psychic phenomenon and mediumship, as well as many aspects of theoretical physics. As an investigator, and especially a paranormal investigator and researcher with over 20 years of experience, Mary is the founder and director of the Paranormal MD Investigations, a scientific and technology-based organization located in Northwest Illinois. The Paranormal MD is not limited to ghosts and hauntings. As a lecturer, Mary has a very diverse educational and work background that aids her in her current endeavors and paranormal field. As far as paranormal events go, Mary not only offers lectures, but is skilled and experienced at leading the public on paranormal investigations, including a few of her own public investigation events. Mary is also an author, and she has authored the book called Continuum. At one point in time, Mary also hosted and produced a radio show. We have a lot to talk about this evening, so sit back and grab that popcorn as we also delve into another aspect of Mary's life, being a medical intuitive. Please welcome to the show this evening, Mary Marshall. Well, good evening, Mary, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for having me. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. And for all of those out there, Mary is a medium. And so this should be kind of interesting. Once in a while, I have mediums and psychics on the show. But it's always exciting to have one, especially with her background, which we'll talk about throughout the show. So, Mary, what I usually do is I start out in the same old place every time, establish the foundation on my guests, where have they been, and how do they come into their awakening or their awareness of having some extra gifts. And let's do the same with you. How far back can you go, and what can you tell us about how this all began for you?
I'm going to start is just kind of, I've had psychic medium experiences all my life and kind of moved to where I got involved in paranormal investigating, because that's really the bulk of where my story in the field starts. Okay. The one is that when I started doing paranormal investigating, doing it by myself, some friends, whatnot, this is back in the day, which is 25 years ago, that there weren't that many people doing paranormal investigating. You couldn't even, this is almost just really when the internet was even just taking off. And so, but I do remember thinking, I want to see what other people are doing, you know, and get involved. And that sort of started where I joined one group and then another, and then eventually broke off on my own. When I started the investigating, honestly, there was this secret that I had about the psychic mediumship, and I didn't talk about it a lot for various reasons. But I thought, what would happen if I go into haunted locations? You know, how would this help develop and try to face it and deal with it? Anyone else in family or local friends to talk to. So that's kind of how it started. And then real quick, though, I learned that my mindset is very left and very right brain. And I wanted things very... People just did not have control in their investigating. And so I just really like put a lot of things into perspective for myself, approaching it. What is evidence? Would this end up in a court of law? You know, that type of thing, and getting stricter. And it could even be as simple as you're doing an investigation and you get an EVP. I know you were there. You know it wasn't us. How do you prove that? You got to make sure that your camera are covering every audio or door in or out of a room, and so on and so forth. It just grew from there. And then the thing that really became a passion for me, and many years later, starting to teach paranormal studies to people. And it started with investigations, paranormal investigations. And this wasn't the, you know, 101, this piece of equipment does this. It's like, what is sound? Let's understand what sound is. What is an EVT? You know, it's like, well, we know what an EVT is. It has to be sound. And the tricky part, by the way, on that, is there is no sound in a vacuum. If you take an audio recorder, and this has been done as an experiment multiple times, put it in something, an old term we call a bell jar, glass jar. There's a bell you hear. As you create a vacuum, well, you know, from space, there's no sound in the vacuum. You hear the ring, 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 and it goes down to nothing. The interesting part of that is you take the audio recorder outside of it, once you can now release the seal again, everything's back to normal. Where there should be no sound, there were still EVPs on that audio recorder. That is literally impossible. Everything we understand and know is fine. So anyway, that's where that started. And it's really only been about 10 years ago got involved in ufology. I was working with MUFON and still connected to those people. And then pretty intensive 5 years of, I would say, outdoor nighttime investigation, whether it was I was going with a friend of mine who was looking for Bigfoot. I was looking for anything at the time. And I come across so much amazing phenomena out there. So that was a pretty intensive education, really, for me. And then last but not least, it seems like every 5 years is kind of like bringing something new into it. It was like, okay, despite being known as the science girl in the field, and teaching, I hid for a long time the psychic mediumship. Silly as this sounds, we're talking about all this weird, strange stuff, right? Mm-hmm. If I were in a classroom, and I've got atheists and, you know, all different denominations, religious and beliefs. Mm-hmm. And I were to say, oh, and by the way, I'm a psychic medium. A bunch of people, but I just say, what is tuned out? As silly as that sounds, we're here talking about shadow people, right? And strange things. But you say that, they're like, well, that's just too much for me.
Yeah.
But that's what it was. And then eventually I knew I had to do it. And what now coming public for the last several years and doing reads for people, and that I feel like I've come full circle. And what I mean by that is when I first started investigating, there were a handful of these pay-and-play haunted locations to go to. You were doing home investigations, and you were really helping people. And now I feel like I've come full circle with that, because of psychic mediumship. I'm really helping people.
Mm-hmm. Let's go back a little bit on your mediumship abilities here. I want you to go back to when you were really young, though, and you discovered that something about you seemed a little bit not like everyone else. Most people, and I don't know if you would agree with this, most people feel that their ability to be, and I'll ask you in a second what types of gifts you feel you have, that these abilities started when they're very, very young, and they also feel like they followed a maternal line in their family. And I keep hearing maternal over and over again, but how young were you? Did you have any kind of paranormal experience before the age of, let's say, 10? And that made you wonder about things a little bit more. And then as you grew older, something was like, yeah, I don't know, I've got kind of some of these abilities here that nobody else seems to have. How young were you?
I think for me, it was definitely there. It was more in traffic. That's kind of the first front for me. It really wasn't until about puberty, which is not uncommon, probably about 11, that I really started to have experiences. And it's interesting, I used to call them daydreams.
Mm-hmm.
No exposure to these type of things, you know, around. As a matter of fact, it's keeping me from doing it in a faith and dealing with it for so many years. With family background, their religious kind of convincing me this is wrong, you know, like this is evil, and you know, so on and so forth. So really trying to stay away from it. I was scared of it as a result of that. Like, I'm doing something wrong, I'm allowing myself to. But I remember things that would really, you know, had to do with family members. Sister-in-law, she was pregnant, and I remember I had an image of her holding the baby, and the baby slid and fell away, and I knew she was going to lose the baby.
Oh, interesting.
And I'm not going to tell her this. Mm-hmm. You know, this kind of stuff. I mean, what do I know? Who am I, you know, at that point?
Mm-hmm.
And so, as it turned out, to shorten that story down, though, is she continued and gave birth to that pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year after that, got pregnant again. And the baby died inside of her.
Mm-hmm.
And she had to go get the doctor, and I had to drive her and my brother, and so that they could give her a shot to abort, lose the baby, because it was already dead.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting there. This is before cell phones, long before cell phones. I was sitting there in the office, and I looked at it for like 2 years. Didn't think about it. And then it all hit. I looked up at her, and she was wearing the same shirt. And by the way, she many, many years later, I told her about it. She said, I never did wear that shirt. I tucked it, and it was, she never wore it during that first pregnancy. That she did deliver, and I freaked out. And my sister lived in another state. She's much older than me. I remember going to a payphone. Oh my God, Kathy, do you remember how I told you? It was so overwhelming, I think, probably is the word. So things like that were occurring, and then continued to, but I really always kept it on the down low, so to say, as much as possible. And just developed it later. Really, I think developed it by trusting it later in life.
Mm-hmm. What kind of, so now that you've been through all of these experiences to this point anyway, What can you identify within yourself that you have either evolved in or so for an example, I know that I am telepathic, I'm psychokinetic, telekinetic, I know that I'm clairaudient, all the clairs, you know, clairsentient, a little bit of psychicness when it wants to come and go. I'm a very sensitive empath, and I'm also dealing right now with a twin flame situation where I can actually sense somebody's energy from 4,000 miles away and have done so since the age of 29, and I'm in my 60s right now. And so it's kind of an interesting thing of evolvement for me. How has it evolved for you? What kinds of gifts can you see in yourself that you can definitely say, yep, that's exactly what I am right now? What would you say to that?
I think the development is sometimes it's just natural and happens, and sometimes I believe that they're almost training you, because I recall like a period of time where you were, you know, I know safety for people at home understand you're seeing, you're hearing, you're knowing. And then I wasn't seeing. I would see images in my head that literally physically, well, third eye seeing a person, a ghost person. It wasn't happening. And so a weird thing happened. I remember getting a little like kind of worried about it, is that at one point all I was doing was seeing, and all of a sudden I'd lost the other one. Mm-hmm. And I realized that this was their kind of training, if you will, for me. And then things as far as development, it's interesting because one of my things that I do now, it probably was always there, but where I was doing it for the public would be probably just the last five years of the medical intuitive. Hmm. And the interesting part is never had a clue, never thought, oh, this is something I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. I had a friend of mine who was a psychic medium. One was encouraging me, you know, fly the nest, you know, shoo, come on, it's time to get moving. I'm like, what, you know, because I think I'm going to stop one second. I took it so seriously, the responsibility, that I wanted to make sure that I was really good and prepared to give people what they needed and should have. Mm-hmm. You know, this is an emotional well-being of most people. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be really careful. But anyway, this friend, he says, well, you know, I see you as a medical intuitive. And I'm like, what? Like, no, like it's never even crossed my mind. And then some things happened and I started going, huh, well, that was a pretty dramatic, hey, Mary, pay attention to this from the spirit world. Mm-hmm. And continue to do that. And it's not something I set up thinking, oh, I'm going to do this all these years. Mm-hmm. But I really firmly believe, you know, we all have our journey, our own path. Mm-hmm. And there are people, sometimes there, something may happen to them. Pretty dramatic, you know, it could be something cancer that may end their life, their human life. And I would guess, well, am I always going to know that? Not necessarily, because some people, that's not their journey. That is what's supposed to happen for them. But then on the flip side, you have people, and I cannot tell you how many of the I don't go to the doctor people.
Right.
That's the one that I always get. Usually it's because they're like, you know, flashing signs and everything else, and they're not paying attention. All right, you have more to do left. We have more for you to do in this life yet. And they want this message passed to them so that they will get the care and help they need. Happy, fulfilled.
So it's kind of interesting. Yes, there is a population out there of I've never gone to the doctor, or I also run into some of this thinking, which is kind of, to me, I don't know if I want to call it unusual thinking or just not following the norm, but I also find that some people will say, Well, if that's God's intention for me, why should I intervene and try to change the plan? If God wants me to pass away from cancer or pass away from this or that or whatever, I'm not going to step in to intervene with that plan. In other words, I'm just going to allow my body to just go forth and do what it needs to do until the day I expire. And the thing is that I'm not sure if that's really an intervention per se of going and trying to keep yourself as healthy as you can be in that sense or whatever. Have you ever run into those people that just simply are giving it to their higher power or God, and what they could be around for a lot longer, but instead they just allow themselves to just do whatever. What have you found?
I'm going to say one sentence, and then I will try to make this a quick story to answer. Mm-hmm. Sometimes God works for other people. That's the bottom line. God gave us brains to develop science so that we can have a medical field to help ourselves.
Yep.
He's given us, all this freedom to become who we are, to have a certain amount of knowledge, to work with him. If he didn't want us to have it, we wouldn't have it. And as far as the God's work for other people, and this is a story that I have told before, but it is such a profound turning point for me personally, and I think for other people to hear in regards to this question. And that's many, many years ago. I had a family member who was having surgery. I tend to stop at the hospital chapel. And I was in there praying, and there was a woman who had her back to me, and she had her coat on, and she was like a statue here, and she was up at the front, and she was praying. And then I heard sniffling, and it just was really apparent she was crying.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking, like, what's going on? And I just... my heart going out to her. And then, and what I mean by that is, I do not, even to this day, generally walk up. I jump through with the Long Island medium thing. I don't walk up to people and unsolicited and say, hey, blah, blah, blah. I don't personally believe that's correct. But I got this message that I needed to tell her something. Now, I know we talk about ghosts, but as weird as this is going to sound, it got to a point where I'm fighting against, I feel like almost God, because of, I was praying, and this is where it came in. It's the only time I had felt so much like this wasn't just a spirit time. This was, a higher power. And I mean, and in my head, I'm like, you can't just go, but this lady's already upset and like, I'm not trusting myself here, what I need to tell her. Okay, one of those kind of things. And she, as she was passing, and she had just got, I stood up and I walked up to her, and this part, they just guided me. Because I walked up and I'm like, I don't want to be saying anything. I'm sorry, excuse me, I'm sorry to bother you, but sometimes God works through other people. Mm-hmm. And I just need to tell you, it's okay, you're going to make it. I don't know what it is. And I noticed, I looked down, and under her coat, she's wearing a hospital orderly outfit.
Oh.
And as soon as I finished that statement, she just started stop and grabbed me and hugged me and then pulled back through a very heavy Polish accent and proceeded to tell me that she was leaving the hospital. She worked there, and she was leaving the hospital to head to the airport to fly home to Poland because her mom is dying. And she had, it still makes me so good. She had been praying, please stop. Let me make it there before she.
No.
I literally, not me, but through me, literally, she got her prayer answered. It's okay. You're going to make it.
Mm-hmm.
So when people come with, if God wants me to know, we have to remember that it isn't always like some sort of, you know, just magic where there's like a word is going to appear in thin air out of nothing. It can work through other people and circumstances to get you to know or think about what God may want you to know, not just your spirit guides, but thou.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the one thing that lately I had some kind of a reading on this twin flame situation I've been trying to wrap my head around for a long time. And what came out in that reading to me was that this twin flame of mine that I've known for 38 years, and it's a he, and it just so happens he's my ex-boyfriend, came out, and we're still in communication, but we're in chaos right now. So that's what part of twin flames go through when they're in chaos. I'm a happily married person, but many of you might be able to relate to this, that sometimes you just have other people still in your life for whatever reason. Well, it came out in this reading with this woman that, he's got the start of dementia. And so it's kind of, you know, one of the things that's really tough on a person is they don't know whether or not they should say something, especially for those of you out here who have had readings done and then some information is shared with you. You walk a fine line. Because for me, I haven't said a thing because right now he and I are in a little bit of chaos situation here with each other, which is normal for twin flames. But the thing is, it's like I have buried in me a comment that he might be going through the initial beginning stages of dementia because his mother right now, who's in her 90s, is in full-fledged Alzheimer's. And so I've been sitting here going, do I say something? Do I not say something? What if she's wrong? What if she's picking up on his mother and not picking up on him? You know, that kind of thing. You just don't want to devastate somebody accidentally if they technically picked up on somebody else. What are your thoughts to that? I know you just kind of mentioned that a minute ago about whether you should be intervening or approaching somebody if you get this heavy or this very strong sense to say something. What are your thoughts about somebody giving you that type of message and then that person has to sit on the fence and wonder if they should really be saying anything at all? What are your thoughts to that?
That is a difficult thing. I think in general, even for me, thinking on psychic medium side of things, probably on a personal level, one of my biggest problems initially was editing myself. I still, I don't want to fight against it, but you know, occasionally kind of like, I don't know, but you know, it's really difficult. This is one of the reasons why I don't do reads for family.
Yeah.
Or people, even friends that I'm close to, if I know real well, there's a conflict of interest sometimes. We know too, and you know, but you know so much, how much are they really going to listen to, you know, that type of thing, but really just a conflict. On this thought, real quick, I do want to say this with the information that you get and why with editing. I have done galleries, but I don't particularly, as the psychic medium, care to do galleries. And here's why. You have an audience full of people. And then you get, what if you get some information that is, and it often is, really personal? Mm-hmm. Does that person want me to say the message that I'm getting in front of all these people?
Right.
I don't, you know, I question, you know, that's where that editing still comes in. So I still kind of prefer a one-on-one. I will be even home group parties. I will pull each individual off and do the reads. For that reason, I think it's the respect of their privacy, but it also maybe alleviates me of the burden of having to sometimes make that judgment call. And because then that can interfere with, you know, are you just supposed to, I'm just a conduit here. I'm just supposed to relay it. If I'm not doing it, am I not doing my job correctly? So, yeah, sometimes with that type of thing, and as far as, like, with other people, I think that's kind of the given. Every once in a while, there's probably been literally a handful of times where, like that story I just told, where it was so, like, you know, you just need to do this. You know, approach the stranger type of thing. But other times, you kind of have to feel the situation out. It's a really interesting aspect of and feel and dealing with people, because it's such a psychological balance. You need, like you said, you need to stretch for the client's well-being as well. And it's, do I or do I not say something? And I try to set up, and I sort of put it out there to Spiritride, of please give me the messages basically that you want them to hear. It may not be what they want to hear or want to know, but you feel it's important for them to know. But when you get into something like you just said, that is a tough situation. What do you do? You know? And I think maybe what, for some people that might be praying on it or meditate on it, whatever their thing is, and see what that guides them to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough call here. I mean, I don't know if once things settle down with this ex of mine or whatever, if things settle down, I might ask if he's been noticing anything. This is a cultural thing too, because this gentleman lives over in Europe and I live over here in the United States. And so there are different attitudes and thinking that goes on over there, even though most people want to believe that things are, from a collective sense, pretty universal, can be just about anywhere. Not always in some of these countries, the way they are brought up to think, to act, to consider things even for themselves. And so, it's a kind of a fine line right now. But right now, it's an okay time, because we're still processing out chaos. But outside of that, so one of the questions I think people might be interested in knowing too is that from some of the investigations that you have done, have you ever been followed home by something? And I'm talking an energy that maybe you came to recognize real quickly, whether it's positive or negative, and what kinds of things were happening, and how did you deal with it?
That has happened early in life. There was some exposure before I was really involved in the paranormal field. Mm-hmm. But during the time of being an investigator and researcher, I would say it does happen. More times than not, after a few days, they will go away too, if you can deal with it properly. If you feed, that old expression, don't feed the bear, you know, if you feed the bear, it's going to stay in there longer, and you see permanently. Don't do that, there's weight, nah. But, I had an incident. I'm not going to name the location, but I had an incident there, and something was so negatively affecting me, and I was using more on the mediumship side. If I'm doing a lead on an investigation, then the psychic mediumship falls second. Now, things come in, but it's a little different. But figure just how your brain works, right? Because you're like going, oh, no, set that up over here. Do this. No, what? And you have all these questions you're answering. And your brain sometimes is going like, audi, audi, audi. you know, between the two. But at any rate, yes, this entity was very dark, very evil, and it was causing me problems so much so that I actually had to say to the people that were there with me, I'm sorry, guys, I have to leave this area. I have to. Mm-hmm. I had left once, came back, and it was still there. And I'm like, all right. So now an interesting thing. This is not me to begin with to be kind of confrontational. So it was affecting my moves, my emotions as well. So we're leaving the location and I'm walking backwards and I'm kind of doing like a yelling, you know, blah, blah, you know, kind of thing. Yeah, that's right. We're leaving. But there's nothing you can do to me anyway because God's protecting me.
Mm-hmm.
I basically just challenged it. By that, not seeming like that's a challenge, I'm just saying I'm protected. But it was a challenge. And so it followed me back to the hotel room. And the person, one of the other investigators, she was already asleep in her bed. I'm sitting there, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning after investigation. I don't know, eating Twizzlers or something because I was hungry. Or going to sleep. And I started hearing the noises in the room. Okay. And long story short is I had literally just laid back on the bed and I got this. And then I started to feel that burning sensation. And I thought, and here's the thing, this sort of tells you something about me. I didn't immediately jump to something terrible. I thought, oh my God, like a spider just bite me or something, you know, kind of a thing.
Right.
I'm sitting there in the dark, taking the flash, trying to take photos to see what the heck, it was a scratch. So the thing came back to the room, made noises, scratched. I recall basically, you know, trying to go ahead, get out of here, you know, remove it type of thing. And just, I had to catch some sleep. I was just trying to went to sleep, praying to keep my thoughts intentionally preoccupied. And that was the end of it. Now, they didn't follow me home, but it did follow me back because sometimes even when you think it's not a challenge, it can be a challenge. I've had 13 investigators. Early on, there was this location that we had, and it would be like, you know, you go to drive home, and you look in the rear of the mirror, and then the back seat. Oh, back seat. No, no, no. Get back in there. No, no. And that, early on, I, for the most part, but I didn't do it at the investigation in the hotel that I just talked about, that one,
yeah.
Is say, you stay here, and I will literally kind of do a whole speech and white light protection of, no, you stay here, you are not allowed to follow me, you know, that type of thing. And really, for me, that has worked. And for most people, it works.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you know, I'm not allowing you.
Have you ever been in a situation, because I have, anything from the mild to the most traumatic, can you think of offhand a situation that either occurred to you directly? When I mean directly, for myself as an example, I've had many touching incidents. I had touching from the choking. I've been kicked up in the air. I've had my butt swiped in the middle of the night. I have had all kinds of things. I've been marked. Maybe we should talk about that. Have you ever been, I have had a handprint show up on my body a couple years ago, which I think I'm finally close to what I think that was, but may never be 100%. Have you ever been marked or had a hand mark on your body or a handprint? Or have you ever been devastatedly like choked or thrown across the room or anything like that? Because, I mean, I have. So not thrown across the room, just kicked up in the air, probably about a foot or two, and then woke up bouncing on the bed. Anything like that or do you think that you've managed to figure out how to reduce those sorts of things by simply just knowing how to deal with some of this energy?
I think some of that is just the second thing you said, is because that was one of my biggest concerns. The more I got into paranormal field, the more I explored psychic mediumship was fear. Fear and protection. Mm-hmm. And that is because very early on in life, at 14 years of age, had an experience to, even as an adult, I have to look back at what was all going on then, mm-hmm. and say, this was demonic. Mm-hmm. And from that period, other instances of identifying dark, which, by the way, for anybody, you know, for those who are listening, if that ever happens to you as you're developing, it's really a process. It is easier to connect frequency-wise to low-level, dark, I'll say, you know, mm-hmm. yeah. entity-type thing versus the lighter. That's actually a different frequency and more difficult to attain. Mm-hmm. So one thing that I have learned was once they are on your radar, you are on their radar, and that's blood. And so as a result of that, I stayed very connected to the protection of myself. And again, that was one of those, when I said in the beginning, reasons that kind of kept me from the psychic mediumship for many years, is the exposure. Well, you have to have this up and myself up, and this other is going to come in. And it's just learning over the years that balance to keep yourself in a protected, light mm-hmm. state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and in some situations, I don't know, especially if you're living in a household where, and I know a few people who still reside with a negative force that actually shapeshifts in terms of they can't seem to get the force out of there because it's hiding in objects within their home. And so they have had to learn how to deal with or live with some of these types of energies where, and I've had poltergeist situations here in at least three of my homes, some pretty bad. And one where I had to, by the way, Mary, I had to take it on because we just moved into a new home situation and I was having all kinds of chaos happening around me, being locked out, being kicked and thrown down, basically not thrown, but kicked down the stairs, tripped more or less twice. I've had things fly across the room. And there was just this one time where I just got so fed up that I just decided to stand up to it and take it on. Now, it took 2 weeks to get the thing out of here, whatever it was. But I have been in those situations where you wish the thing would just go quietly, but sometimes it's territorial or it doesn't want to go quietly, and then you've got yourself a problem. I mean, I hear this all the time, but what's your advice or your thoughts on, or maybe you should just tell people a little bit some people, they're under the wrong, interpretation of what saging a room can do to something like this. That might be a good starting point here for you, because in some cases I hear it doesn't necessarily completely correct the problem or kill it or snuff it out. It might move it out, but then it might come back in. What are your thoughts on saging?
Like most things, intention, intention, intention. That's really what it's going to come down to. You can go around a house with sage, but if you're focusing on all the wrong things, all the negative things, it's not going to just, like by magic, work. And it's interesting that you had mentioned using the word poltergeist. And most of us, it's obviously like the dictionary, right? The understanding is poltergeist is a noise or ghost.
Right.
But really in the field now, there is pretty much like an 80% consensus that poltergeist activity is caused by a human agent. And so what that becomes in a work in cases, which is way too long to explain now, I do talk about in class, is dealing with the fact that our part in the paranormal activity that we experience.
Mm-hmm.
You have situations where, let's say, for instance, the Philip experiment. And it was 1972 with Dr. Owens in Canada. A group of people got together and they worked on trying to essentially create a poltergeist, create a ghost that didn't exist. And so they had a bioform. At one point, about a year in, they asked, and I'm convincing this all down, but they asked Philip, as they named him, a question, and Philip responded by knocking back. The interesting part about that experiment is that when they asked Philip a question that they hadn't collectively had an answer for, Philip didn't answer. He only answered the questions that they knew. Now, we have other equipment in tests that people are doing with spirit boxes and whatnot. I think that our part in it is greater than we know. If you are in a haunted location and you know there really is a human, several human ghost entities there, but now we're all sitting around some sort of piece of equipment that lights or talks or flashes or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you have 6-7 people or 3 all collectively sitting around watching, waiting for the lights to go off. Are they going to answer? You have a concentration, literally, a collective consciousness of energy all being focused at one thing.
Right.
I question sometimes how much are we responsible. Now, I'm not saying ghosts don't exist and don't communicate. Yes, we do. But some of those times I question that we either can enhance it or do the opposite, block it, but could also maybe create a second stream, if you will,
right,
of that collective energy to cause things to happen. In a sense, kind of making it easier for the ghosts to get blamed for it. And it's kind of, we have a part in it, you know? So, I know I digressed off there. I apologize, but I'm trying to go back to the original question. I'm not sure how I answered that, but.
No, that was good. And I can add to that too, by the way, what you just said. So initially in house number, I've been in like 4 houses now. House number 3, we'll talk about. I used to notice clock dials advancing. I used to notice the key. We had a key in the front door that was always up and down like this. And I used to look at that key all the time. And one day, the key was like this. Okay, so it was turned in a different direction. But yet my husband never touched it. I never touched it. There's no way someone from the outside could have turned that key. And so I began to blame, although I know the house was haunted because things were crazy in there. But I used to think, wow, something's watching me all the time. Because if I'm studying that key or looking at that key and one day it's this and the next day it's this, something turned that key. And I used to think, oh, well, maybe it was this ghost or this poltergeist that we, or several in the home, which it could have been. But on the other hand, then I thought, nah, maybe it's me doing it, because I've come to kind of realize that I'm a little bit telekinetic, not just psychokinetic and telekinetic from a distance and from a short distance here. And maybe just doing this myself, because I used to study the clock all the time too, by the way, and I used to concentrate my energy into it. And I used to go in there and wonder, why is it always 6 hours ahead? It was just very, very interesting. And the difference between this is that my husband and I went on a trip once, and we left in my bedroom, everything the way it was. That this clock I'm referring to now is a different clock in my bedroom. And as we were flying home, I was just thinking about just the clock and wondering if my little prompts in the, I had little duckies and bells and stuff like that sitting on the bed waiting for them to be moved while we were gone. But when we got home, the clock dials again were 6 hours ahead in my bedroom, Was that me doing that from afar, or was that something within the house still wanting to play with me regarding, but I always wondered why it had to be 6 hours ahead rather than two or one or three or four. I don't know. It's kind of was significant. Do you have any thoughts on that? Are you trained enough or familiar enough with psychokinetic and telekinetic abilities to be able to answer why 6 hours ahead?
Well, you know, again, when you get into situations like this, right, it's pretty complicated. That's why it's actually true when somebody says, oh, you know, people go in and investigate for, you know, a night. It's not even weird enough. I was at a location, fortunate enough, I had a historical society that was 4 or 5 years. I was able to go in there consistently. You really create one, a body of information, but also strange way relationships, right? So you really sort something out. To me, I think you probably are dealing with them both. It's one, it strikes me immediately. If you are having, now this doesn't mean it's ghosts are everywhere, but the ones that are really going to interact with you, it seems like wherever you're moving, you're having a lot of activity. Mm-hmm. That just is a signal to me, like a flag right away that says you have some part in this. Mm-hmm. Now, what is that part? So it's not like you want to get strict or pushed or be annoyed, you know, whatever the circumstances is, but there's a subconscious level of energy that is constantly coming off of you.
Yep.
And that builds up. And it can do a couple things. It can almost work like a satellite.
Mm-hmm.
You're the satellite.
Yeah.
So when you have the ghost entity, I'll even say it that way, some type of entity activity around you, you're the dish. Now, what's going to happen? Are you going to stream it out to the again, or does it stay? No, of course it streams out, right? It doesn't stay on the dish. The signal's going to bounce. So I personally think that you actually do have a subconscious effect on that activity that's going on. And that's hard. That's one of the hardest things. Sometimes it can be a really clear case. I did work on a case where it was an adult daughter. I moved back home. She was having a lot of problems. And long story short, some stories were talked about that she had said, and that's when it started triggering. Wait a minute. And when we got to the other side of it, once she got, and I'm not saying this is the case for you, this was very severe. She got on medication, she got therapy, and when she moved out of the house, all that activity stopped.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The parents were not experiencing it. And the last time it did experience it is when she was a teenager and went at home. Mm-hmm. So there was something about her that either magnified the energies coming in, and that's really a problem really for you and people like you, because that stuff that can affect your health and your well-being.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not easy to control if you don't know you're doing it.
Right.
That's the mentality. So you've got to get into other aspects of trying to control that, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's just interesting. I've written about several things. Well, I've had over 100 experiences with paranormal activity, and I've also had 3 to 4 what I believe to be visitations from something outer worldly, extraterrestrial or whatever. But, you know, that's another time. But I just think that, you bring up a good point here, and we use the word tulpa, creating a tulpa out of ourselves, and something that kind of strips off you and starts running around and creating havoc. You know, it's kind of interesting, because when it gets down to that, for me anyway, because I'm like a beacon, it's very interesting to try to determine what's me sometimes and what's could be potentially something else. Mary, you have a book out. You've had it out for a while. I think it's called Continuum. Can you tell us a little bit about that? And then we'll go into a wrap up regarding how people can find you and have a reading with you and all that.
Kind of flew. So, but anyway, The book is Continuum. It is actually a fictional book. And I did that. It was a passion project for me. I have been involved in paranormal and science, you know, going back to multiple dimensions, multiverse, you know, those type theories my whole life. So this book is a character study as well. And the main character is Kate, but she goes back in time. Mm-hmm. And it looks at a couple things up in the, a little bit on the science side about time travel, but also on the character study of how people that she knew, you know, their parents or something, how did they get to be the way they got to be? What were they like? So that was just a passion project for me. Someday there may be a sequel, but it was great because I was one of the readers actually said, you know, oh, the ending, it was such a good twist to it. I loved it. Mm-hmm. But it could be, does that mean there's a second? And I'm like, yeah, at some point there will be, but, you know, we have a lot of stuff we're all doing. Mm-hmm. As far as getting hold of me, I think probably the best way, there's two websites, if I may, which is theparanormalmd.com. Mm-hmm. Or mediummarymarshall.com. And the reason for the two separate is one, it's going to talk more, you can get to the medium one on a tab, so to say, at the Paranormal MD website. Mm-hmm. Because that's talking about classes, you know, and educational, because by the way, I do teach these classes out of the college, but I do them on Zoom. Mm-hmm. So you can live anywhere in the country and take the class. Mm-hmm. But yeah, either one of those sites is probably the best to learn about what I'm doing and do a book reading and stuff like.
Mm-hmm. We will put all of this information in the show notes. So that way, the beauty about this program is that it's pre-recorded. So you can go back, and if it zips by quickly, you have the ability to go back, freeze frame it, and grab that information. And I'll make sure both of your websites are there. And again, if you're interested, that sounds like a very interesting book, Mary, by the way. Go to Amazon. It's probably still there, right? And grab a copy or whatever and have an interesting read. Because if anything, a lot of this, whether it's non-fictional or fictional, there are lessons and there are things within the book that will actually stimulate your mind and your own thought processes on things, which can be very, very valuable. So, Mary, we'll have to have you back on the show again sometime in the future. For today, though, I think we've done a pretty good job of trying to explain the world in which you live in. So, again, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you for joining us this evening. Dr. Schutz welcomes your emails and paranormal stories. Visit her website at www.paranormaluniversalpress.com for contact information, or go to amazon.com to view her books, searching under Paranormal Encounters. Thanks for listening. Take care. And until next time,
be careful what you wish for.
The script, vocal talent, and music compositions in this podcast program are copyrighted. As a disclaimer, this podcast episode or parts thereof may not be reproduced, reposted, or transmitted in any form without the express permission from the producer and company, Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, or ParaX Radio Network. Any opinion or claim made in any podcast episode by the host or guest does not necessarily represent the viewpoints of Paranormal Universal Press, LLC, ParaX Radio Network, or its sponsors. Properties mentioned in any podcast are publicly known to be haunted or have been discovered to have unexplained occurrences. If you are a ghost seeker, please take precautions and respect people's properties by not trespassing.